Congratulations!
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kay Rhodes.
And me, Mason Wazwaz.
Okay, this is our pre-holiday episode.
Oh my god.
We're gonna be taking next week off, but here's this week, which is going to be a mellow chiller.
Interesting.
I put out a little call out on Instagram for people to send us some questions.
Hey now.
So
good for you, Kate.
You wanna deal with some of these myriad of listener questions?
Sure do.
Also, dog assistant Wally Rhodes.
Walter Rhodes is here with us today.
He's gonna be contributing his.
Walter, did you want to say something to the people?
Okay, so we got a listener question here.
Hey, don't eat that. What are you eating?
What's he got? It's okay. He's just chewing on it. Okay. Okay, we got a listener question. What is the escape plan?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Does anybody
fucking
want...
Fucking A. I feel like we've been listening, thinking about... haven't you been thinking about that nonstop?
Yeah. Does anybody want to start a non-cult art colony? Let's think a little bit about colonies that haven't been cults.
I know.
Remember Black Mountain College, which was an experimental college founded in 1933 by John Andrew Rice, Theodore Dreyer, and several others?
Sure do.
But weren't it was they? In Black Mountain, North Carolina.
Who am I thinking of?
The school was organized around John Dewey's principles of education. And some notable faculty and students, okay.
Such as?
You got motherfucking Joseph and Annie Albers.
Okay.
Ruth Asawa.
Oh, we know
favorite.
Her.
Favorite. Ray
Bay
Johnson.
Area daughter.
Robert Motherwell. Dorothea Rockburn. Cy Twombly. Rauschenberg. Merce Cunningham. John Cage. Okay.
All the people.
Wait, hold up now, Mason. Merce Cunningham was a dance
choreographer
person.
And dancer, yes.
And that is a woman?
A man.
Oh, okay.
A gay man.
Sure enough. Okay, good job, Kate. John Cage, Buckminster Fuller.
Merce Cunningham was partners with John Cage.
I didn't know John Cage
They're
was a gay,
gay
man.
Lovers.
John Cage?
John Cage, the musician.
Wait, please. Avant-garde. Hang on now. We're live fact checking.
Listen,
here.
There was a time when I knew all of this juice. And Rauschenberg often did the sets for Merce Cunningham's pieces, and John Cage often did the music. So they were like a real awesome festival.
Hold up.
But
now.
I wouldn't call them a cult. But clearly, maybe their time at Black Mountain College really, you know, hardened their. Wrong.
Hardened.
What do you call it? What really like when everything comes together, really brought together their bond.
Yeah.
They're like working bond. It's like grad school, right? Where you
forged
just like you forged
strong
their strong
bond.
Working relationships.
Oh, wow. Yeah. No, you're right as rain.
Okay.
John Cage had some beautiful love letters to Merce Cunningham, apparently.
Sweet. God, John Cage was a brilliant musician. Holy fuck.
Okay, well, glad we sorted that out. Okay, so was it a cult? Jury's out. I'm just saying, if you're going to start some kind of colony, especially if it's going to be geographically isolated, you got to put those anti-cult mechanisms in place right off the bat. You got to have a democratic governing system, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to just have one charismatic leader in power.
And also just, I think collective governing can be really challenging. I just want to put that out there.
I agree.
You're never going to have a group of more than five people where everyone agrees.
More than one person.
My general experience with collective kind of group work. Kate and I hardly agree, and we're only two people.
I can't even agree with myself most of the time. So you're going to want to work through that. Now, Maysoon, I recently found out that friend of the show, Andrea Fraser, is on the board of this weird, it's
Ooh.
Not an art thing, it is something oh. fucking else. GREX, which is an organization for the study of authority, leadership, and group dynamics.
Wow!
And she's been like leading workshops and shit that basically like take a group of people. This is like third.
I kind of love this.
Yeah. This is like third hand information.
But this is serious cult.
Well, no, I don't want to call it a cult.
Is it like a think tank?
I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. It is a West Coast affiliate of the A.K. Rice Institute for the Study of Social Systems. Definitely cult.
What the fuck, dude?
Okay, don't call it a cult.
Okay.
Don't call it a comeback. Is it a colony? It's been here for years. Okay. Point is,
ooh, nice
soon.
One.
It's called Grex. And so, according to some third-hand sources who went to one of these workshops that she did, it's basically like she gets a group of people together and through a process that is kind of psychoanalytically based, I'm assuming, she breaks down like all the hierarchies in the group.
That sounds
they
great.
Like really like fucking reckon with like all the different shit going on.
I want
I
more
can't
information.
Exactly describe. Okay, please hold.
Wait, she's on the board of this organization, so she Andrea Fraser is not doing that work.
She is. She leads these workshops sometimes.
So she is the hierarchy is what we're saying.
Well, no, dude, that's the point. That's they what fucking it break it down. Like. Look here. Grex provides experimental learning and a variety of related application opportunities designed to increase participants' understanding of the dynamics of groups and social systems, particularly those which relate to leadership and authority. Okay? I mean, it does feel a little culty when you look at
a
some
little bit,
of,
yeah.
So you can check it out. That's Grex, G-R-E-X, grouprelations.org, and I'll put a link in the underworld. I'm just saying it's not a cult to my knowledge, but when you look at some of the, like, symbols and shit they have, like, look at this weird agile development diagram. It's like a spiral with spirals coming out of it.
It looks like a bunch of pubic hairs. That's my head.
That looks like, give me that. Give me that back.
No. It's mine now forever.
No, damn it. So anyhow, look, what I'm saying is,
that shit's trying to fuck with you.
You should go.
Spirals within a spiral.
Before you make your art colony, you should get everyone who's coming with you to go to this, to go to the, one of these workshops so you break down all the hierarchies between you and you can have a truly equal democracy, mm-hmm. or however, whatever system you're going to use for, you know, to have equal governing, right?
Would you want to live with in a colony of artists?
No.
I think that's my other question. It's like, what would that, and I love artists, there's no, I've got no problem there, but it's sort of like, I don't know, what if I want to live in a place where everyone's kind of doing the same thing.
Yeah, you'd
you know
want to
I mean?
Be in a more mixed up, like, yeah, with a dentist like, and, like,
we need,
a
you're,
life coach.
You're going to need a dentist in your colony. What happens if you got a toothache?
You go into town.
Oh, so this is just, like, communal living with a couple people.
Is that what do you want it to be? You want to be, like, the Rajneesh?
No.
Okay, good.
Oh, my
okay,
God.
Okay, Maysoon. Grex is approved by the California Psychological Association to provide continuing professional education for psychologists. Okay, they're legit.
It sounds quite interesting. Okay.
I can't wait until we have Andrea Fraser on the show. I'm
going
to have to start calling her by her proper name.
I can email
Andrea
her.
Andrea Fraser.
Andrea. I can email her. I would shit a brick to do that.
Her.
I would have to study for like a year before we could interview her.
We just keep it casual. So I hope that answered your question.
The first question was,
do you have an escape plan?
Let's talk about our escape plan.
I mean, especially this week with the fire that's not going to be put out, I heard, until December 1st.
I heard after Thanksgiving. Yeah,
isn't that
exactly
unreal?
So an escape plan. You know, we were supposed to go camping this weekend. We called the campground and they're like, nope,
say sayonara,
don't come out. So the one thing you could do, and I've talked to a few friends of mine in the arts who were, you know, curators, different museums. They're like, they're on drugs because the fucking fires are giving them asthma attacks, all sorts of shit, sneezing fits, you know, people who have like already, you know, what's it called? Compromised systems, right? They're like really feeling
I'm sucking
it.
On my inhaler from time to time,
right? And they're like they're trying to figure out what to do, and my friend was like, oh, my husband is has a work event, a work whatever thing in Hawaii, and I'm thinking just go with him for a week. So he's escaping off to Hawaii, which I checked it, the air quality is in the I think green yellow zone, so it's quite good.
Oh yeah, smoke can't get all the way over there.
Yeah,
can
I think well, yeah, I mean,
good news, Maysoon, in my
Monterey
camp
is doing okay.
Oh wow, really?
Right, because
the whole country.
Well,
the whole
for
country
some reason,
of California,
the LA fires, according to the air quality charts I was looking at, LA is fine right now.
No.
That doesn't make any sense to me either, but that's what I read.
Well, I don't believe it. But point is, Maysoon, anybody else is thinking about their escape plan. You're going to have a lot more electoral power if you move out to Wyoming. P.S. Wyoming is number 3 in air quality in all the states of America. Yes.
Because there's probably not a lot of industry.
Depending on what town. No, there's a lot of industry. But if you're in Casper, Wyoming, you're all set. There's a lot of, like, extraction industry in Wyoming.
Oh.
Okay, so I hope we answered your question there, listener. Get out to Wyoming. Get out to your colony. Maybe where else, Mason?
Do you think they're talking about an escape plan from, like, our political situation or from our fire situation or all of the above?
I'm thinking a Bay Area get out situation. Get out the Bay Area. I just assume that's what people
get
are.
Out the Bay Area.
Okay, another question from a listener. What's your best advice for UC Berkeley students who are starting their very own podcast?
Oh, listen to a lot of podcasts.
And just shout out, their podcast is going to be called Artistical. Okay.
Guys, are you sure?
It sounds like our testicle.
That might be better. Why don't you
guys,
just change that?
Rethink that.
Just reconsider the title of your podcast is really
Artistical.
Important.
Come on, guys. I don't know. I love it. Fuck it. I love it already.
I mean, we're going to love it no matter what.
Okay, UC Berkeley. What's your advice for UC Berkeley students starting their own podcast?
My first advice would be to listen to podcasts because I think it's super helpful to hear what you like and don't like about podcasts, other people's podcasts.
I say don't do that. Just jump both feet right into it.
Well, we did that.
Just make sure your levels are good, guys. UC Berkeley's got another podcast called Chapter and Verse.
Okay.
And man, it's really good show. It's well done. The guy who interviews people is super smart. He had Julia Bryan Wilson on. She was incredibly smart. The guy mics himself really far away.
Oh.
And then the interviewee is really close.
Really close, so the levels
are
off.
So you have to be
crazy,
like turning the volume up and down depending
on
who's
that's
speaking.
Terrible. Maybe he only has one mic and he's just like yelling at the mic that the guest is on.
Yeah, right. Not that our sound quality is always
ours are
like
pretty
fucking
damn good,
Dolby
dude.
5.0 surround.
Oh, poor us. Oh my God.
Well, I'm just saying, like, sometimes we're in the car, so.
Yes.
Okay, but anyhow, mix your shit right. Get good people on. Remember that the person you're interviewing doesn't have to be famous to be interesting. Like, all kinds of people
totally
are interesting.
I'd also say I think it's actually would be good for you to get a sense of what kind of show you want to do. Like, Kate and I are very clear and not about like not being some like hard hitting news art show, right? Like, we like to swear, we
but
fuck
I
around
like that. Don't pretend that you're NPR.
Don't pretend like you're NPR.
Yeah, I feel like there's enough podcasts out there where it's
there's
like
so many podcasts,
you know,
out there like
that. This is John Dillio in his basement. Like,
think,
why does he
about,
have to pretend to
think
be
about
Ira
what
Glass?
You have to offer that's different than what you've been hearing. Maybe
soon I called somebody John Dillio and you didn't give a fuck.
I don't give a fuck.
Okay, well, that's your advice, UC Berkeley. You're going to do way better than us. You probably already have, like...
You're probably already stars.
Right? Jesus
fucking
Christ.
A.
I couldn't have got into UC Berkeley.
You better
credit
us.
Could you have gotten
of
into
you
UC?
Could've.
Fuck no, dude. I barely graduated from high school. Seriously.
But you did go to college before you... Oh, you mean...
I went to art school where they have no, like, prerequisites.
Berkeley has art school.
Okay, but it's UC Berkeley. Okay, I'm moving on.
Whatever.
Could you have gotten into UC Berkeley?
Probably.
Well, you're hot shit.
No, I just... What the...
What was your GPA?
I don't know. It was probably near 4.
Damn.
But not 4.
Mine was... I just scraped up a 2 at the end. I'm not kidding.
Amazing! Yeah. I might have been like a 3.7, 8, something like that.
I was just so high, Mason. Okay, got another question from a listener. How last minute is too last minute to put together a coherent presentation, generally speaking?
Fuck. You know, I'm going to say it depends on how good you are at bullshitting and how good you are at public presenting. What's that called?
Public speaking?
Public speaking. Thank you. If you're good at all that shit, you can probably get away with a lot of shit, except for your teacher's going to know.
I don't think this is for a class.
Oh, you're a person?
This is an anonymous person, but they are like a young professional.
Young professional. Okay, great. Perfect. How late is too late? I don't know. Why do you want to fuck around? Try to do a good job. You know what I mean? Like, take it seriously or don't do it, kind of. Well, I'm sorry. That's harsh. You're probably a wonderful person. I'm sure you're a wonderful... Oh, my God. I probably know you. I'm going to see you tomorrow. I'm sorry.
Do you know who this is?
No, not at all.
Okay. I have not revealed the identities of these questioners to Maysoon.
This is all blind.
Okay, Maysoon. I'm just going to pick up the torch on that one. I'm going to say it sounds like you already know that it's last minute. And... so probably now, because you recognize that you're in the last minute, so go ahead and get started.
Yeah, I'm like this person is the problem. This is why
you're like that.
This is why I can answer the way I'm answering.
It's because you're really telling yourself.
Get it fucking together. Totally.
I just think that if it's an artist presentation about like your work, actually you're really prepared. You actually are prepared.
You totally know it. Yeah.
So don't worry about that.
I agree with that.
I don't know. I think that it's always good if you're in the last minute, I would say try to really focus on maybe a couple of key points and get those really down pat and then keep the rest kind of loosey-goosey and just have bullet points.
I have to say that I think there's always going to be some last-minute-ness to presentations anyhow, because you can have a presentation that maybe you use all the time, but you're going to change it up depending on like where you are in your own practice or in your work or different ideas that have come your way that you've been thinking about, and so you're going to shift it for it to be more relevant to you in the time. So
the question was how last minute is too last minute? I'm going to say 45 minutes before.
I'm going to say a good 2 hours.
Yeah?
Kind of.
Okay.
Because don't you need to like, Kate, you're like the queen of like early.
Well, I get like you get straight so up anxiety anxious. Ulcers.
Yeah, like there's no way you, I mean, I guess this is not a personal question. It's more just like in general.
Yeah, if I've got a presentation coming up, I basically can't do anything else until
it's
I
done.
Feel, yeah.
And until the presentation's over, probably for you.
I'll feel like I can't enjoy any other part of my life until I not only have like planned and organized the presentation, but then also given the presentation.
Yeah.
So, but I also think, you know, if you just have like shit tons of stuff going on, you know, and you just don't have the luxury of a lot of time to work on it, then fucking the people going can thank their fucking lucky stars that you even fucking did it. So fuck them. Fuck everyone.
No. No.
And just, you know, go with what you got.
You know, do your best job. Take your best shot.
Okay.
Do the best you have. Good luck.
And, okay, another question here from a listener. How's the air over there?
Shit.
That's from George Chen, who's down in L.A., which apparently is having a great time. I just don't believe that, Maysoon. I think L.A. is probably... got just as bad at air.
I'm telling you, that's what I read.
How's the air? It's up in the 180s.
We're in the 180s, George. Hope you guys are okay down there.
I don't know what that measurement actually is, but I know 150 is already bad, and we're like well past that. So everybody, keep your masks on. You need those. What is it? N95.
N95.
Got to have at least an N95 mask. I got one from Conrad Guevara from Bonanza. Gave me one. Thank
God. That's great. Go, Conrad. Way to save the day.
Went out to some openings with my little mask on. So those were all our listener questions. Wait, there was one more. I think it was kind of, how soon will Trump self-immolate and shed his man skin to reveal the literal demon within?
It's already happened.
I know what you're thinking. Hasn't that already happened? And I think that's a real gotcha question and not very fair because things can always get worse.
Oh, well, thank you.
Okay, great one. Thank you for that. Okay, Maysoon, what openings did you go to?
Okay, well, first of all, on Friday, you dropped me off to go see Carrie Mae Weems speak.
Oh, wow. How
was
it?
At the DeYoung. She is wow. She's wow. Really. I was, you know, when I feel like I'm used to seeing artist talks, right? Like I've gone to a lot of artist talks. Oftentimes they have the same kind of like pattern, you know, like early days, whatever, influences. This was like poetry. It was so beautiful. She started by talking about, first of all, she spent most of the talk not even talking about her own work, but talking about other people's work, which you can see the connections to her work. But it was so like, so selfless, or you know what I mean? Like in a way, it was beautiful. She talked a lot about appropriation, and she started with really thinking about music, because music has been a huge influence in her life, and how in music, appropriation is a given. Like if you don't know where you're coming from or where you're pulling from in music, you're not doing the work in some ways. And how she was talking about how in the art world, appropriation is like this big bad word, right? You know, like no one wants to, you know, make work that's too closely identifiable as like as coming from somewhere or like else.
Derivative,
yeah.
Or is she talking about like cultural appropriation?
No, she was talking about sort of
just like, yeah, well, you want to be your own original, like, you know, but completely separate from any other work.
But she was saying, I mean, I think she was kind of making the argument that that's
bullshit,
kind of bullshit, yeah. Or just like not realistic, and yeah, that it shouldn't be looked down upon to, and not be like impossible, a true original, like to, yeah, actually embrace the shit that you've learned from other people.
Yeah.
And no matter what, I mean, you're going to present it in a different way. It was just like so beautiful, beautifully inspiring. She showed like, you know, the first thing she did was like she played, I can't remember the name of the song, but the song that Frank Sinatra did that she truly loved. Like she was like, I love this song. She was playing the video or playing the song, she would talk about like, oh, and like hearing that tone. Like she was like totally getting into the musicology. It was so great. And then she played the same song, but a version of Aretha Franklin had done, which is obviously going to be so different. And just, I don't know, it was just really such a beautiful talk. I hope that DeYoung recorded it. I hope that it's available for you. If anyone listening has never seen her speak, you know, live or in person, I would highly recommend it as like a top experience in the art world. Definitely very inspiring, really beautiful.
And she's like a Bay Area person.
Yeah. She came out here to join Anna Halperin's... It's happening.
It's like the ocean.
Yeah. It just got really loud.
Is it that? Do you hear that?
Yeah.
What is that?
Calm down, little
guy. Is it the fucking aliens, dude? Did you hear that the aliens are here? There it goes.
Did it go?
Yeah.
That was so weird. Sorry, also, she was talking about how she came out here when she was really young, like in her maybe 17, I think, to join Anna Halperin's dancers group.
Wow.
Right. So she like has this background as a dancer, which to me was like very, I always am like, oh, that's why she's so like attentive to music, because I think there's obviously a strong link there.
Yeah.
Or maybe that's, I was sort of like, oh, that's how I am with music. I was kind of like, so you're like, Carrie Mae Weems and me, we're the same. We think the same about music. That's so cool.
I was like, yeah.
I was sitting next to Mark Mayer from Asian Art Museum. And I was like, that's because she was a dancer. I told
you. You said that, yeah, to him. I love
that. I was like, you know how she's doing that with music? It's because of this. I do that too. Wow. Anyhow, okay, well, we're the same. We're like weirdo sisters. It's pretty cool. Oh
my God. Okay, fantastic. Okay, what else did you see, Mamie?
I also had this moment of FOMO, which I never really, really, truly have.
Now, FOMO, that is fear
all
of...
All these fools know what that means.
Fear of missing out.
And it was around Ragnar.
Ragnar Kjartansson?
Ragnar Kjartansson.
Oh, yeah, we didn't go to that. And I was seeing that left and right, too.
I went to it.
I feel like I saw it. I feel like I was there.
Romantic Songs of the Patriarchy.
That's right. At the Women's Building in San Francisco.
At the Women's Building. I did go. I did not.
Well, you went, dude.
I went on Monday night.
No shit.
Sunday night. Sorry. The last day, last few hours. I was having
I want you to really take us there.
No.
Come on.
I can't.
But it was like everybody and their grandma was there, and it seemed like everybody loved it. You hated it.
I'm such an outlier.
Okay, tell me why you hated it. First off, explain what it was.
Okay, so it was at the Women's Building, which is an amazing radical community space
in the Mission,
San Francisco,
right?
In the Mission, that has a beautiful mural on the outside. It's just a great historic space, period. Thank you.
Now, the Women's Building is a women-led nonprofit arts and education community center in the mission. It advocates for self-determination, gender equality, and social justice. Yeah. It has served as a event and meeting space since 1979 when it was purchased by the San Francisco Women's Center. Wow. And it is shielded from rising real estate costs because the group has owned the building since 1995. It is a four-story building. And it also is a residence, which rents to multiple tenants and serves over 20,000 women a year.
So this project, it's called Romantic Songs of the Patriarchy. And it's basically like, I guess, so Ragnar... coordinated, I want to say like 30 women musicians to play songs in all of the spaces of the women's building. And so when we went, there were probably 20 women. So I think there must have been shifts where people were kind of coming in and out or switching, because it's like there's no way you could do that the whole fucking day probably. There was like one woman on the second floor in the stairwell. There was one woman sitting on top of the mailboxes on the first floor. There's one woman, you know, there's that big main space. There were like three people in that space in different weird corners.
That was like kind of looked like a gymnasium.
It's their big main space. Yeah, it's gymnasium looking. On the very top fourth floor, there was like a woman in an office space. You know, there were just all the spaces. I didn't go into any of the bathrooms, but I heard maybe there were people in the bathrooms too, which I would have liked to. Bathrooms are kind of an interesting space for sound, I think. Just all the ceramic. I don't know.
Right.
Anyhow, it would have been interesting.
And but so is that a functional bathroom that you're like can pee in?
Also peeing and pooping in? Maybe. Not sure. Kind of awkward.
Yeah.
You would have hated it, huh?
I mean, I just wouldn't have ever used that bathroom and just left.
Okay, I have questions because I'm like, did the women choose the songs that they sang, or was there like a list of songs that they got to choose from, or whatever? I don't know. So each person is singing a different song,
and it sounded like the songs were like kind of anti-woman songs. One like is "Stand by Your Man."
I didn't hear that one. One was like Sting's "Every Breath You Take," or the Police "Every Breath You Take." Excuse me. There's another one that was like the Rolling Stones,
which also is a creepy kind of rapey song.
Stalkery.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. The Rolling Stones, "I Can't Get No Satisfaction." There was also like, what's that guy's name? Robin Thicke's "Blurred Lines."
Oh yeah.
So they're
like fucked up. Like,
there was also like John Denver. One of the problems for me was that I hated all of the songs for the most part. Like, right. I hate the original version, and it's going to be near impossible for me to like this interpretive version or this other version.
Even though it sounds like then the idea was to reclaim these to put them in the women's perspective to kind of in a critical turn, right? Like,
I think that was the goal. I think actually, I don't know if it was about reclaiming as much as sort of like really kind of highlighting how fucked up the songs were.
Right. Okay.
More than like making them like, I own this song now. Sure. This song is like from me, my perspective. One thing for me was that I generally don't like those songs anyhow. So it was sort of hard for me to even listen to them in some regard. Another issue I had was they chose every woman, every female, like singer-songwriter, nouveau folk singer out there, so everyone sounded the fucking same, and I wanted to pull my fucking hair out.
What?
Honest to God. I'm just like, why would you? And I don't know what that is. Like, I literally don't understand what that is.
Wait, hold
on. Everyone's playing an acoustic guitar, okay, and they all are singing in that like folky new folk tradition.
Uh-huh.
And I just honestly already don't like that style at all, and to have an entire building full was like not fun for me. And I also just don't understand, like, why wouldn't you diversify the style of music? The only song I actually really liked was the woman who did Blurred Lines, and she had sort of like a soul, like her style of singing was more soul and sort of blues oriented, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
So that was my other, like, why wouldn't you actually choose artists who are playing different from different genres of music,
right?
And like mixing it up a little bit. So I just, that was sort of hard for me a little bit.
It sounded to me too, though, because like, weren't there parts, like especially in that large room where there maybe were like three different women doing three different songs all at the same time.
Right.
So maybe the hope was that if you kind of like put a limit on the kind of style and like the instrumentation,
if it all sound like
That if they have orchestral to kind or of something. Blend together, that it won't be like total cacophony.
Yeah. It was kind of cacophonous no matter what. Like you couldn't, for me, in some of the spaces where there were multiple people close together, you couldn't really focus on any one song.
God, that seems so hard to do as the musician, to be able to keep
in your own tempo. I can't imagine. I don't think they had earplugs in. I know there were a few moments where like people were like very clearly like tapping their guitar to kind of keep time,
right?
Or like really tapping their foot. So I honestly feel like it was a racially diverse group of people. I guess that's good. There were songs in like other languages, or I think maybe primarily English and Spanish, I could probably say. Mm-hmm. You know, the list of songs and the list of the performers are available on the C Project, is the group that sort of hosted or, you know, brought this forward. So all of that information is there. I feel like it would have been more impactful to me if he used his position as like a white man from Iceland, which is actually a very like equality, like very women are treated much better in Iceland than they are here. So it's sort of like, where is his experience even coming from, or his like critique coming from to some degree? I feel like it would have been more impactful if he had a bunch of like white men or men doing something about like breaking down the patriarchy to some degree.
He needed to get Grex, you know what I mean? In there.
Like, I feel like, why didn't he have like 30 men singing songs about feminism in like a heartfelt way?
So like same thing but reverse.
Kind of.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like to me that because that would have been less of like, I feel like, again, it's like this thing where like women have to do the work. You know what I mean? Or like, it's always like the person who's being oppressed who has to do the work against that, which is like, that's a given too. But like from his position as a privileged white male, I feel like he could have shifted it where it's like putting the work on. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think
know.
It could have been more interesting for me personally if he had done it different.
And like these women were paid, right?
Of
the performers.
I that was not written anywhere, but fuck, they better have been.
Right? Because he had funding for this.
Yeah, yeah, they had to have been. I mean, this... I don't know the woman who runs C Project, which is the name of the organization, but, you know, she's bringing Ragnar out to do this, you know, commission piece in a, you know, site-specific building.
I'm sure they did.
I'm sure he's getting tons of money.
Hopefully they paid them well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I hope they got, like, a proper musician rate. Like, I'm doing this for 3 days for 3 hours a day. This is my hourly rate something close.
Or even more than that.
Yeah, or whatever, you know.
Tons.
And my understanding is that the women also repeated the song. So they sang the same song over and over again.
Yeah.
Which is also pretty exhausting.
God, yeah. Especially fucking Sting.
I know.
Oh my God.
I mean, I like the idea. I like the ideas behind his projects. I like the idea behind this project. I understand why it's at the Women's Building. I just don't feel like, for me, it was successful. I didn't feel drawn in. I didn't feel moved. I didn't have all those things that so many people seem to have with his work. Like, I have talked to people who are like, oh my God, I cried. And I'm like, I did not cry. I wanted to get out of there so badly. You know, and it's like, I'm not here to discredit anyone's experiences. We all have different experiences, and that's fine. But it's just not my thing. And I went because I was sort of like, let's give another try. Let's give this guy another try. You know, like, let's keep trying to like his work.
Did you have to pay admission to get in?
No, and I do.
It was free.
You had to get, they wanted you to get tickets because they wanted to kind of get a sense of how many people were going to be moving through the building just to make it a more comfortable, experience. So all of the tickets were sold out. They said you could put your name on the wait list on the Eventbrite, but you couldn't. So then I went on their Instagram to see, like, what's the deal here? And they were like, just come by. We're trying to get people in, you know. And Jimbo and I just walked right in. We like walked up. There's no one in line. They're like, oh, we just want to pop in, see if we can see this. And they just gave us stickers and we were in. So it was super easy. And so I really appreciate that because that feels more in a place like the Women's Building. It's like all about community and like real services for women who are you know, are victims of domestic violence or whatever, like serious hardcore like services. Like, I'm like, come on, this better be fucking accessible to the people who actually use this space, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think it was, I just don't know if those people use that, if people who are actively using that space were there for that. I don't know. You know, there's all those, I have all those questions.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's kind of a sticky situation.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it was an absolute shit show. Let's say that. It just wasn't my jam. I wish that it was done in a different way. I don't, you know, could someone else have done that project more successfully for me? Probably.
Yeah. I mean, I almost kind of wish, okay, so this is what I'm assuming how it went down, and I have no reason to know this. It's pure speculation, but it sounds like he had the, so the C Project woman took him around San Francisco, had multiple venues that he could choose from. I know this for sure. And then he chose the women's building. Okay, that I know from,
how do you know,
from
this?
Reading an article about okay. it. Okay. And then I'm assuming he got connected with somebody in the Bay Area to be like, I need tons of women musicians and guitar players.
Yeah, she's credited. There's one local musician, I forget her name.
Oh, who like organized all the
something
people?
Something McKinley, I think. Andrea McKinley. It's on the website, who probably was the main, the
facilitator to
yeah,
get all
who
the
was
people.
The local person to get all the women in to play or to
And then
organize.
I bet he said to them, pick a song that is a fucked up song from a man's perspective. Mm-mm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, don't you think that's probably was his hand in mm-hmm. the project? And then they probably had that agency to be able to pick one.
Yeah. I do. I mean, based on his piece at SF MoMA, the kind of like folky,
Like
indie rock emo folky tradition,
like, lots of like is humming really, and clapping
is really his jam, right? And so I wonder if like that was an instruction in there when she was
that you have to be an acoustic guitar singer songwriter.
Well, I mean, I think it makes sense to for everyone to play like the same instrument because that does bring some cohesion together musically, I would say. That style, it's just,
but like, really, wouldn't it have been interesting if they could just like play what they wanted instead of like having to do this big comment on like the male gaze? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
But would it have been, I don't know, would it have been better or worse? I don't know. It's hard. It kind of reminds me of,
I would have loved to have talked to some of those women, just sort of like, so would be I would love to interview the Blurred Lines woman. She seemed rad and she did a fantastic version and was like, yeah, she was great.
Yep. And the other thing is, like, there's a list of all their names, right? Some wall text.
There's a list of their names on
like
the wall text.
But it's not like they're wearing a name tag. Was there, like, a map that told you where each of them was?
I don't think that wasn't...
So then they're also, like, kind of slightly anonymous, because you can't put a name to a face when you're going to see them.
That's true, but I don't know if that needs to be... I don't know if that's, like,
I don't know. It's just the whole, like, transactional thing of, like, what are the women getting out of it? Remember when Keith Hennessy did the project with Keon Gaskin and Brontez Purnell? It was called Blank Map. It was five black performers and musicians. Like, Wizard Apprentice was in it, and 80 from Black Salt Collective.
Yeah.
And
at Mission Dance, right? Dance Mission.
Yeah. And it was a similar thing where it's, like, a white organizer is getting all these artists together that were black artists to do a project, I mean, about blackness.
Yeah.
And but I that was interesting because each of the artists and then Keith got all the grants and stuff together to make it happen. I feel like part of that though that felt different than this Kjartansson project.
Well, Keith is part of that community. He's not black, but he's part of that performance community, like pretty and
yeah, it's
deep,
not like,
you know,
flying in somebody from Iceland to just like okay, but but I think you got to hear, I mean, in the performance there were parts where people are straight up talking from their own point of view.
Yeah.
Plus you in
and critiquing Keith in some ways,
yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, the other thing was that they had a zine with it where each of the five performers got to talk about their experience making it, including some of them saying like, I wouldn't do this again, it was fucked up, and I don't like how it went down.
Yeah, right. I need a post Kjartansson zine.
That's the thing. I feel like all these kind of things where it's like somebody with privilege doing a project about like systems
what
of
another
oppression.
Group experiences,
yeah,
right?
Right.
I just can't. It's that's where it turns for me. That's where it feels
like you mean the Kjartansson.
Well, yeah, in both situations, yeah.
Yeah, it's maybe. Just kind of like because I think also with the Keith one, I think it was kind of like, we're going to get this money together. And it seemed like there was a lot more freedom for the performers to kind of decide what the performance was going to be.
Oh, yeah. It was. Yeah, it seemed really from them, from the performers.
And then this Kjartansson thing seems a little more like he, more top down, like, this is my structure that we're going to fit these performers into.
Yeah.
But that's just complete speculation, because I have no idea how he organized this.
Yeah.
But it just feels like very...
I do want to give a shout out to the women's building for just being awesome and being there. And you, everyone should just go ahead and donate to them ASAP. And also, I'm going to just say this. The star of the fucking show of that piece at the women's building was the neon vagina on the fourth floor. That's like a 4 foot tall neon fucking vagina. It's amazing.
Hell yeah. I love that. I hope everybody that hates us now for talking shit about this thing that everybody seemed to love.
I hope you'll write in.
Yeah. Give us a call. 419-351-6606. You can leave us a message there, or you can text us to that number. Or you can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast. You can email us, congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. How's that Facebook page going, Maysoon?
Hey, it's going great.
Liar.
I'm a lying son of a gun.
Maysoon, post, get our Facebook going.
I want to get it going.
Strong.
Hey, man, I updated the image of the dolphin.
You should be updating that image daily. Update it daily. Oh, God. Okay. And we'll be thinking about Gryffindor from the bridge.
To the other bridge.
To the island in between. This has been Congratulations Pine Tree.